Winning at Life. Yeah, it's live radio, live financial talk radio. So we're going to talk about money, Social Security, 401ks, investments, volatility, emergency savings. 504-260-0995. That's the number to join the conversation. We'll give it to you again shortly. I am your host, Gregory Ricks. If you have to get away from your radio and you just want to keep listening, like most do, you can audio stream as through the iHeart media app and through the Winning at Life app. And we're on a whole bunch of channels to watch the show. Hey, James.
Hey, Gregory Ricks. We're having Wes on as our guest on the Saturday show, and I reach out to the guys about halfway through the week or so, most weeks, try and get a beat on what are we talking about, so we have a whole day or two to look things up and do a little more research on it. And today something came across his desk, and he's like, James, I've seen this too much, and it's only ramping up. And that's the way certain people charge their fees. Now, when you go into some of these...
Certain people?
Well, for him...
What are certain people?
Okay, he gave me an example, but it sounds like a parallel that you've talked about in the financial world, he talks about in the legal world.
Okay.
So instead
of... So he's talking about legal people?
Yes.
The certain
lawyers.
People? Okay.
Sort of other estate planning services that don't charge a flat rate, but they charge by a percentage of the estate. And he says, if anyone starts to even negotiate that, just pack up and run in another direction. That's a really bad sign. Not all of them are bad guys. But people get away with a lot just by saying, no, I'll just take like a percent or whatever. And just a percent or whatever.
I saw one of those sometime back, a will that stated that, you know, I'm not an attorney, so I don't handle succession or anything. But, you know, so there's been times where I've been, you know, read through a will and I was stunned that, you know, they're set up to handle succession, and if succession happens and runs through them, they're getting a percentage. It's not that it has to happen through them, but the document was set up that this attorney would handle it, and a percentage of the estate. Now, it's like craziest thing I've ever seen. Well, then my guidance or suggestion was, well, I know one attorney I'm not using.
Explain to the guy, listen, you and I get this, but explain to the guy, listen, why would that be a big idea? Why would a percentage of the asset that, you know, that's just 1%, whoop-de-doo?
Well, if it's a $10,000 estate, you know.
You're getting a deal, right.
Yeah, but if it's like $500,000 or so, and they're wanting 20% of the estate, that's crazy. And I don't, and you might say, oh, they didn't mean that, mean 1 or 2%. I'm just not comfortable with that, and they wouldn't do it on that low amount. It's usually a significant percentage, as what I'm familiar with when that happens out there. And, you know, my thought was, well, I know we're not using that attorney for succession.
So he also told me about something else that's kind of shady in his world. These are things we're going to be addressing in the 11 o'clock hour on Saturday's show. But some lawyers have made duplicate wills, where they get both of them with an original signature on them. And that's been a problem, because if the guy goes and he takes his copy with him, and then a few years down the road, he's like, all right, I'm going to get rid of this one. I'm going to replace it with a new will. But then that new will gets lost. A lot of times his duplicate will can show up and kind of wreck the changes that he made, instead of referring to like a copy of the new will, if you have an original of a will. So sometimes it just muddies the water having some of these duplicates. I didn't quite understand it all, but the way he was explaining it to me, I finally came around and said, oh, okay, I could see how that would be a bad idea.
Okay, so what he's explaining is there's only one original will.
Should be.
That's
the rule that gets broken that causes problems.
And who keeps the original will?
Well, there's two of them.
I'm talking about in what it's supposed to be.
Oh, okay, yeah, the guy. The client, not the lawyer.
The client, not the lawyer. So he's got to put it somewhere, and hopefully he remembers where he hid it. And it shouldn't be any hiding to it. You just put it where your other important documents are.
Right.
Just some people might have more of those type documents, and it gets lost in the mountain.
So I was just going to throw that out to you. If there's any shady things that have been grinding your gears, I know we have this discussion quite a bit on people who get stuck with variable annuities because it's just fee on a layer of fees on a layer of fees. And that just kind of seems a little unethical at times.
Yeah, legal.
That would be a concern. And you know, the other, you know, kind of worries people too when you get to billing, you know, billing by the hour on a succession. You know, so I've had these concerns mentioned to me. Well, why is it taking so long? Do you know why it takes so long to go through succession? And, you know, we've heard Wes say it shouldn't take that long unless there's problems. But they said, well, you know, paying them by the hour, it could take forever. I guess they have a point there, but you should have some comfort with who you're dealing with and trust there. But if you can get a flat fee for it, guess what? There's some motivation to get this thing done and out the door. Just saying.
Yeah. So we'll go through that a little bit more on Saturday. It's just to kind of grind your gears.
So I'm giving some thoughts, but that also gives me questions I want to ask him and what he's seeing and what's rubbing him wrong.
Right. Something else I was talking to him about that he's going to have a lot to add on to is what we talked about yesterday with the way the judges are interpreting the eviction moratorium and how it's being treated very differently in Orleans Parish than every other parish and county in our listening area. And it all comes down to this declaration, the self-made declaration that the tenants have to give their landlord saying, boy, I sure have had a substantial loss in income. You don't have to necessarily prove it. You just have to sign a piece of paper saying it. And so we'll have a legal mind in here to add another layer on top of that Saturday as well. Financial news today. Initial jobless claims for the week actually rose by 4,000. So the trend line, I mean, 4,000 is kind of piddly considering the numbers, 870,000. Economists were expecting 840,000. So, all right, it leveled off. The job growth and the jobless claims that were falling have kind of plateaued and were feels like we're going sideways. This feels like the kind of sideways we see a lot of times the month before an election. And I have a strong reason to believe this sideways momentum is going to hold. Am I crazy?
I think we should have some improvement on later in this year, which when we're getting down to it, and I just heard through my head, Gregory, there's not that many more months, but yeah, I still think on the back end of this year should see some improvement there. We should see improvement going forward and not necessarily that it stays sideways and unless things fall off the cliff and get worse. There's concerns about that, but you know, I hear whispers of a vaccine coming out and that should help some comfort. And ultimately, do we have some for real treatments that if somebody gets this and they're over 50 that, yeah, we've got this handled, you know, those are things going to improve and then low rates. And then, you know, like I was listening on Newsnet last night and Orleans, I still think is in phase two, but they got the lowest, like one of the lowest percentage of parishes in the state of Louisiana there. But what we've got to do is look, we've been through this for months and we kind of know how this goes. We know to wear masks. I would think most everybody, you know, social distance, but let business start doing business there, start easing up on the reins, so to speak. And it'll help with these jobs. You just can't keep everything held back and think this is going to be fine.
New home sales surged to 1.01 million in August. They were expecting 895,000. July sales were revised higher to 965,000. These are all record territory numbers, Gregory Ricks. So one of the concerns is when we went in the pandemic and things slowed down, is that lost economic activity or is that pent up economic activity that's going to snap back like a rubber band and we're seeing the rubber band?
Well, we're going to have a shortage of homes in the future for sale because of what's going off the market. Building homes, I was talking with a contractor the other day and he says, yeah, there's nothing going on new construction. He said, pretty much anything that needs a bunch of wood is put on hold.
Too expensive there. To build, huh?
Yeah. So I've got him on a project for me. And I said, well, it's a good thing we're not using any wood. He kind of laughed. He said, yeah, it's a good thing. So metal and sheetrock for the most part. So it's just interesting there. But I think you're going to see some demand on the other sides pent up in next year.
Yeah, this would be a horrible time to build the Ark because lumber prices have doubled, tripled, quadrupled, depending on what kind of board you're trying to buy.
Yeah, and some types of wood he was saying was is triple in price. It is just crazy. Now, look, this is going to catch up. Law of supply and demand, and they'll get back to cutting trees, cutting board feet, and you'll see it cycle through. It is going to take a while, though. There's just no immediate catch up on this.
So you mentioned the likelihood of a vaccine coming before the election. Two companies now have enough data from their late stage trials to submit their vaccines for approval that could be approved in October. They're within a month of it. And if that gets approved, the U.S. expects to have 100 million doses available by the end of the year. I get a feeling that whenever that news happens, there's going to be a big pop in the market, but that pop's not going to last. The excitement will die down. It'll rejoin the trend line and just keep moving.
It isn't like they'll start manufacturing the doses. Those that are having success, they're already manufacturing the doses. It's not like, okay, they get approved, we'll get it ramped up, and they're going to keep making more. But if they're saying they're going to have 100 million, that's because they've already been in production for a while.
Chris from Destrehan had an issue with Social Security windfall elimination provision. This is a one-minute call, so don't go anywhere because I know Gregory's going to add to this. Chris in Destrehan, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Chris?
Hey, Gregory. It's Chris. Hey. I have a similar situation. 39 years in private practice and hope to have 5 on the public side before I retire. What kind of effect do you expect from the windfall for that situation?
If you have normal earnings and that document I mentioned lists, gives you history of what substantial earnings are, but you said you had 35 years in the private sector?
Actually, 39.
Yeah, you're not going to have any impact from it. I don't see being 39 years of full-time, legit working and paying into Social Security. Yeah, that government period of 5 years is not going to have any impact.
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Best case scenario, Chris.
Being 39, I feel you have 30 or more solid years of substantial earnings. So you're good to go. Awesome.
Thanks for the call, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you to Chris and Destrehan. We're back live now. All right. So he's only going to be working on that government pension for about 5 years. Can you get a decent monthly check off just 5 years of pension contributions?
Not much impact, but he hasn't worried. So anything that he gets is extra on top of his Social Security and any assets that he's accumulated to have other streams of income.
I got to tell you, I'd be excited if it was like 600, maybe 700 bucks a month. I mean, that pays a couple of bills right there that you don't have to worry about. Do we have the phones fixed or you want me to do this other one, Bailey? I'll do Thomas then. Here we go. This is the other call with the windfall elimination provision that we're running from Saturday's show. This one's 3 minutes. Thomas and Gonzalez, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Thomas?
Question I have is, I plan on retiring at 66. I was told or heard that the longer you wait to turn on Social Security, the larger the penalty for the windfall tax applies. So if you started earlier, it was a less of a penalty versus waiting to maximize your Social Security. And I was just calling to see if that's a true statement.
Well, what is your situation that you're calling about? Are you impacted by the windfall elimination provision?
I am. I did approximately 23 years in the private sector. And after that, I ended up in the local government as a professional firefighter. And I'm going to end up doing about 27 years in the state pension.
Okay, so you do not have 30 years in the private sector then?
Correct.
So there's no workaround. You are going to be impacted. One thing about if you've got Social Security and you have turned it on, it's not going to be impacted until you turn on that government pension. And that's where those reductions are going to fall in place is once you turn on that pension, then you're going to be reduced.
Okay. So I guess my main question is, I can actually turn on my Social Security early, even though I'm still employed. And then once I reach a certain amount of income, then the Social Security cuts off. Or I can extend my time and wait for Social Security once I retire, and then the Windfall Act will actually be, that's what I was saying, I guess that'd be penalized at that time then, correct?
Yeah, so one of your problems of, because you're of average or middle income, you're not poor, you're not rich, like most of us are. So, and you're working and turning on Social Security early, you're going to have too much in earnings for that to really work, because, you know, if you make over $18,000, roughly over $18,250 this year, they're for every $2 above that, they're taking back a dollar from that. So it's going to impact the Social Security that you're taking. And then when you retire, you're probably saying, well, gosh, I need that pension. You're not going to defer it just to grab some Social Security dollars, because you're needing to turn on that pension, which is most of your retirement income. So it's tough to get that workaround, honestly.
Okay. I was trying to get a good balance of which way would be actually the best time to do all of this, whether it's going to be at later, like 67, 70, or while I was still actually working and letting them take $2 for every dollar I earned.
Yeah. Now, once you make FRA and you're continuing to work, so your government pension would not be turned on, you could turn on your Social Security and start receiving that. Then there's no impact for earnings. So that's kind of subject to how long do you work. We had a professor call into the show a few weeks ago regarding that discussion, and he was retiring early, but he had some Social Security benefit. So he was turning that on, was probably going to draw it a year or two. Then he knows it's pretty much going to wipe everything out when he turned on that pension at that time. So that sometimes there's a small window where you can fit that in.
That help, Thomas?
All righty. Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Thanks for calling. Thanks
Great call.
For listening.
Okay, so there's a little balance to the force. We had nothing but good news for Chris. Thomas, not such great news, but that's why you got to call 504-260-0995. Figure out how this whole windfall elimination provision stuff is going to affect you. 504-260-0995. As pensions fall out of favor in the private sector, are they falling out of favor much in the public sector as well? Because I kind of get the feeling that's where we're seeing more of them. More of them are coming from government workers than corporate workers.
I don't think that's changing, and that's surprising, but it isn't going well for them budget-wise. From that standpoint, and it's a problem for the employees where they keep doing that. And when Social Security was started, you know, back in the 30s, Congress felt that they could not force a federal pension plan, which is Social Security, on state and local governments. So they gave them the option of joining Social Security or not. Most did. But some did not, and still today, about 10% of all workers, mostly in state and local jobs in the public sector, are not covered by Social Security, which, you know, they might have to adjust that pension, dial it back. But, you know, I think the whole thing is everybody should have been participating in Social Security, because that's where we hear the problems, the complaints, the unhappiness is because they weren't. You know, it's always good that you didn't have that 7.5% taken out of your check, but when it comes time to get benefits or the spousal benefits, which the government pension offset provision affects that, you know, they're like, what? I'm not getting my spouse's benefit. It's just gone. No, you're not getting it because you didn't participate in Social Security. Well, I've got my 40 quarters. Yeah, but you don't have 30 years of earnings for the workaround on that. So, yeah, people are upset. I think it's a raw deal.
I feel a lot of parallels to the situation when they tried to somewhat nationalize healthcare, where a lot of people were looking at this new plan that they would all be forced in. They're like, no, I like the little deal I got over here. So the railroad workers got their own little carve out. And then the government workers at the federal level, they got their carve out. And then at the state level, they got their carve out. And then we're left with this little mutant.
Now, I commented that I think it's a bad deal. Yeah, I hate it for them. But the laws are correct in the way Social Security is designed and the windfall elimination, because it's in three tiers, and the low-income tier, it replaces roughly 90% of their income. Middle class, about 40%. So it would be unfair for a government or public employee to say, wow, I didn't participate, because they're made look poor because they got a bunch of zeros. The rules are actually very fair for how it's being handled. They just didn't participate in Social Security. I'm sorry.
So how was the webinar today? The latest in the webinar is the Medicare series, when to turn on Medicare, how to know what parts you got to start. It depends on if you're still working or not. And then it also depends on how big the company you're working for is and if they offer you the right kind of health coverage. So it gets pretty hairy pretty quick. Did it work out all right today?
Oh, the webinars go fine. It's a lot of good information, and I knocked it out in, I don't know, about 30 minutes. And Brandon Michael on our team did some of the heavy lifting on that. I kind of did a Q&A with him on the back end of it, but he's pretty thorough. I told him he did a great job on that webinar today.
I want to see this at some point, because I like the Social Security webinar and the fact that it's probably a similar conversation you have to have with every client and every family that comes through, and you're just isolating that one aspect of the financial plan and just hyper-focusing on it and nailing it.
Well, this explanation is kind of like a front-end conversation. It might be more to the point if we're sitting down with somebody. We are exploring what's going on in their financial world, because it doesn't come down to, okay, how much does it cost me? Where do I sign? You know, it's not quite that. You need to look at what's going on with you financially. Have that discussion. There are different types of plans, and you have your Advantage plans, and then you have your other supplement plans. And it depends on your traveling, you're going to move somewhere. You know, there's a number of things need to be discussed there. And then we take you into our software on selecting the plan, finding the fit, looking at the choices and helping you with that. We don't do that on the webinar, but that's kind of more of, you shift from there to, yeah, you guys sound like you know what you're doing. Okay, yeah, help me out with that. And that would be the next step. We go from that, so people could sign up to have a conversation, or knowing they have this upcoming and are wanting to learn more there. You know, we've got stuff you can download for some more help as well if you join the webinar.
The next webinar is coming up Saturday after the show. Gregory's going to eat a blazing quick lunch and then have a webinar start at 1:30 in the afternoon on Saturday. There's another one Monday when you get home from work at 5:30, and then Wednesday at high noon. So go to gregoryricks.com. A red banner will pop up at the bottom, let you know when the times are. Go ahead and register it. Pick which time's right for you. You get an email, and then once you click the link in the email, it pops up on your screen, and it really is that easy. Hey, so we're adding videos constantly to the YouTube channel. It's the Winning It Life. Just search for Winning It Life or Gregory Ricks on YouTube, and it'll pop up. And we're noticing that people go to the Social Security questions the most, and they go to the 401k questions the most. And I'm starting to think that, of course, Social Security is going to be one of the most used programs, because it applies to almost everyone except for a small little handful of never beneficiaries. But a quick second to that would be, is 401k, do more people have 401ks or IRAs, or is that really just kind of the same world? Can you even delineate?
What are you getting at
there? Well, Social Security is the biggest program that the most people are going to have to deal with. I can almost say everybody. Number two, I would think, would be 401ks.
Qualified accounts. Let's define it as that, which means your 401k, SEP, 457, 403b, IRAs. Those are qualified account. I'm not including the Roth. Roth's a qualified account, but it's a tax-free account. So let's talk about those qualified accounts, which deal with untaxed money. that are inside of those accounts. And yeah, that's the next big burden. Tremendous amount of decisions, and they're not all quite the same, especially on moving money out, like 457, 403Bs kind of have some hoops to jump through. You don't get in-service rollovers on those. You have some different roles with 401Ks and then SEPs as well there. But all that money's, you know, is going to be RMD forced at some point in time in the future. So those dying in 2020 and thereafter, the new RMD rules are affected by those on inherited money because there's no more stretch. And if you didn't start, if you weren't already of RMD age last year, your RMDs don't start to age 72. But that's the bulk of the money, and this money is taxed. It's going to be taxed as ordinary income as it's distributed.
All right, so the data on our social media shows us when they do go down that 401k route, there's really only two questions they're interested in. Number one is, what do I do with the 401k from a previous job? And number two, what do I do with this 401k when I retire? So it's almost the same thing. That 401k is ended. What do I do with it now? Well, if you're going to continue to work, roll it over probably. If not, how do you turn it into a monthly check? It really just breaks down to those two branches on
well,
the tree.
Well, all savings and investing turns into, how do I distribute money? How do I manage money, or how do I get help, and how do I turn it in to income? And I think you should deal with somebody that is really experienced at managing income and can think and process that, because there's so many situations that come up. I'm gonna try this from a football term standpoint. You know, would you say there's more high school teams than college teams? Yeah, that's easy.
That's an easy one.
And they all have quarterbacks on those high school football teams, right?
Yes.
But they all don't make it to the college level.
Right.
And those college teams probably sign one, two, or three every year, but they all don't get to start, do they? And then we know we have one heck of a lot more college teams than we have professional football teams in the NFL. We'll stick it to that, because Canadian League has some, 32 teams?
Right.
And how many starting quarterbacks do they have?
32. Yeah,
32. And they'll have maybe one or two backups. So, you know, the math is that puts them at 64, maybe some of them's extra. So there's around 70 or so quarterbacks in the league. You can kind of call it that number, right?
Yeah.
Reasonable. And of course, only 32 of them are starters, and are all of them, all those 32 starters, are the teams all in love with them, their starting quarterbacks?
Some downright loathe them.
Yeah. So they're not all happy with them. And we were talking about this the other day, and I'll go back, and some unique things, and we were getting into this discussion about offenses and stuff, and going back to Joe Burrow, you know, quarterback at LSU, probably had one of the best seasons of any college quarterback ever. But we were talking about protections and how some NFL games are going and such. And I said, the thing about Joe and the college program is they didn't keep somebody back. He had five linemen. You know, well, he had the tight end. No, he was going out for a pass too. Oh, what about the running back? Well, he might chip somebody, but he was going out for a pass. Everybody was going, and he had the vision to know that within 3 seconds, somebody's about to hit him, and he's got to be rid of that ball, and he's got to find somebody to throw it to. And he ran a small percentage of the time, but he just had this unique vision that obviously is translating, you know, because they kind of like what he's doing at Cincinnati. But not all pro quarterbacks have that ability for that vision to see all these scenarios playing out. I'm going to translate that now to income planning, where people have multiple assets, Social Security, things changing, needs, dynamics, inflation, interest rates, investments, ebb and flow of volatility to see how this is going to go in the future. And, you know, I'll say from my standpoint, I've been doing it somewhere over 30 years. You know, when you think of somebody retiring and say, well, you know, I'm going to do it myself. You know, recently I asked somebody, I said, how many retirement plans have you planned? He thought for a moment and he said, none yet. Well, I don't know, but I've probably done thousands. And then it's not, and this, and I was looking at one the other day where incomes changed and I'm like, yeah, this is kind of have to go and reset. And I was talking to my team on how to look at these things. And I said, you always have to be re-updating and there's changes that go, and we have to look at how do we reset the income. And even when we've put plans in place years ago, say a few years back, you should be looking, and we've altered some of our things. There's ways we can even improve upon what they're doing. But when you're looking at, well, I'm going to handle the retirement myself. Well, how much stock trading you've been doing over 30 years? You know, I've been watching the news and stuff. I have a little trading account. You know, I move around my mutual funds in my 401k. That's your expense. So have you done income planning, factoring in taxes, inflation, volatility? You got a handle on this blending according to your risk. When you're starting a new job or venturing into something new, do you like know it completely, have it nailed, and everything goes well to begin with? Yeah, I know what the answer is. It's, nah, I make some mistakes. You want to make some mistakes with that amount of money that you're going to need for the next 30 years? Just saying, you might want to use somebody that's experienced. Okay, so I know you asked me something and I just went off on a tangent there. But I think it's how it should be looked at. You have no idea of what you're taking on, and you're just going to have a go at it and see how it goes. And if it doesn't go well, say you've got $1 million and your heir's 30% down.
Okay, the second half of that discussion, you got this big pile from your 401k or maybe the IRAs from your other 401ks. Once you're done working, how do you turn that into a check that deposits into your account every month?
Well, you have to figure, you know, once again, what you're getting, and I gave you a long story but didn't answer your question. You've got to get it properly blended to your risk and have a plan for success that it keeps moving forward for you, and you've got to be able to take income relative to where the earnings may be. So you need to have some sort of confidence there. And I was asked this question regarding 4% the other day, and somebody said, and I gave them an answer regarding income, and they said, and you think you can support that? I said, yeah. Now, you live long enough, it may stress the assets a bit, might be a bit of a some spend down, but unless you live into 110, 120, I think you're solid. You're good.
And just to clear it up,
my opinion there.
In your metaphor, you're Joe Burrow, right? Is that what that was? You were the Joe Burrow.
I
get it now.
All of the field, and I can make the calls, make the decisions, and the adjustments.
Gregory, that you need. GregoryRicks.com or 504-832-9200. I'm James Parker. We're Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks.
Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Roth conversion is a taxable event and may have several tax-related consequences. Be sure to consult with a qualified tax advisor before making any decisions regarding your IRA. hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.